you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what's a podcast?
A podcast is a thing humans invented to procrastinate from doing important things, like actual work or spending time with their families.
Neat. Enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Chapter 16, Season 2, Episode 2, Dance Dance Resolution. Directed by Drew Goddard, including guest cast Tia Sirkar, Luke Golden, Mary Beth Monroe, Bamba John Bamba, Josh Siegel, Aisha Kabia, Jess Rowland, and Joe Mandy. Unbeknownst to his boss, Sean, Michael keeps rebooting the humans over and over. He's frustrated that Eleanor keeps guessing it's the bad place and resets them 800 times. Even Jason solves the ruse at one point. On the 802nd reboot, the humans finally realize it's the bad place and travel to Mindy St. Clair's. Mindy reveals that they've been rebooted and visited her many times, including forgotten details, such as revenge plans on Michael, and a tryst between Chidi and Eleanor. Back at the neighborhood, Vicky leads the demons in a strike, resulting in Michael eventually giving up and asking the humans to be on his team in order to thwart Sean and Vicky. Our guests today are the writer of the episode, Megan Amram, and Jamila Jamil, who plays Tahani. Megan and Jamila, welcome. Everything is great.
Woo!
Hello.
Why did that change for season two?
This is a good segue into the episode, but we started playing with like very small changes that Michael was making for the world that the humans were going to be in. I personally think it's very funny that he thought that everything is fine. Changing to everything is great would have some sort of impact.
This'll
on the
trick him.
Experiment he was about. Yeah.
It shows how dumb he thinks humans are, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. Which it's like honestly pretty dead on most of the time. It's like,
oh, humans are dumb.
Yeah. One little word change
could
have done something. But yeah, there's a lot of fun little tweaks like that in this episode.
Before we get too far into this episode, Dance Dance Revolution, which is sort of the Groundhog Day
Dance
episode.
Dance Resolution.
I'm sorry. Yes. I just came from an arcade. I just came from an arcade and was just playing. I want to talk a little bit about Tahani's trip through the season two premiere, and we get to see your first meeting with Michael after Awaking Dead, which we didn't see in the first season. We get to see your version of that.
I think Tahani reaches like godlike levels of smug. In that moment.
In the moment where
she
accepts.
You know, you push through arrogance all the way into legend?
Yes.
Yeah, that's where I feel like it was like Mariah levels of...
That's her feigning surprise at arriving in the good place.
Yeah. And also accepting the genius of the writing of, yes, I accept. It was one of my favorite lines throughout the entire series. So
even
far.
You just saying that line right here in our studio.
Disgusting.
Impressive. No, I'm very convinced by it. And I was like, yes, you are. Beautiful and elegant.
Now, congratulations, beautiful. Now,
but I have a strange memory. It's like the only good part of my brain is my memory.
That's not true. You have a lot of good parts to your brain.
That's not true. That's a
lot. But I'm very impressed by that because I personally, after I say anything, immediately forget what it was. Barely remember anything that happens on this show. Definitely don't know what happens in my episodes, so...
So why are you here?
I don't know. I just wandered through some doors, and there was a microphone. I know Jamila, So, no.
Yeah, only because I message her every day. but I... But also, it is just, it's a well-written show. These are memorable lines. Also, she in particular is such a, they're all such caricatures in like their own way, but particularly Tahani. She says such ridiculous shirt.
you can say whatever you want.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we'll replace your voice with a voice from the show.
Okay, great.
She says what?
Well, no, ridiculous
shirt.
that I think it's also like engraved like upon my soul.
Oh, no. Are you becoming more Tahani over time?
Probably. I mean, my Instagram is fairly unbearable now. Just posting constant photo shoots. Disgusting.
I think that's great.
Oh, that's true.
First of all, I love looking at Jamila in photo shoots. If you've never seen her, she's very photogenic. But also, I am very pro-selfie. I think everyone should be posting photos of themselves. That's the biggest problem in this country today, is that not enough people post photos of themselves.
I agree. Yeah. That's actually what's wrong with the world. Yeah. And, you know, I think more things would be cured.
You're saying that on June 19th, 2018, that the biggest problem with this country.
Yeah, just to keep this rooted in
just a baseline
time.
Is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yep.
But other than my social media, I'm hoping that I'm not becoming more like Tahani. I'm hoping, if anything, that her vulnerability that she started to show as the series goes on is slowly starting to rub off onto me.
I feel like you're asking, so I'm going to move on.
Okay.
I thought there was such a great thing in that episode when Tahani is really tortured and has a short soulmate and a tiny house and is forced to wear cargo pants and dress down. Was Uncle Buck at all a reference for the short thing? Do you remember in the movie Uncle Buck, he goes to meet with like a principal. And she's got a wart on her face, and he keeps saying melanoma and Molly Russell's wart, and it's pretty great. And I feel like you were saying short was had some connective tissue.
I think that it owes a legacy to jokes like that. It was not
an Austin Powers
direct. Right. Yeah, I mean, the show can basically trace everything back to Austin Powers, but
especially the English bits. Yeah,
it's so funny that Tahani. For who is in all other aspects a perfect match for her, and also not that being short would not be a perfect match for her, just cannot focus on anything else. She's a very fun character to write for because she gets very tunnel visioned about things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also just remember having a discussion, which is like, what is the opposite of Tahani? And the answer is cargo shorts. Like, if there were an opposite of a person, it would be cargo shorts for Tahani.
I loved them. I went out and bought a pair.
Oh, that's yeah.
Because I, too, had never worn trousers until that day. And now I wear trousers all the time. So
no,
it really
don't.
Has impacted. Yes, I do.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
That's so difficult. I can't fathom you in
them.
I
know. In a very sheltered place where she just had to wear dresses.
Sundresses.
Sundresses all the time.
I just needed a vaginal breeze. Go on, write it down. Go on, get your little pen and pad out. Go on.
Yeah.
No, I've just not, I don't know why. I just never wore them. And then I had not tried them. After a while, I guess I became afraid of them. I don't know why I'm now mirroring your body language exactly.
I'm sitting in
it's really
very weird
and creepy.
Yeah.
No, but I loved that outfit. I loved that episode. I loved how disgusted she was about wearing off-the-rack separates. She was so unkind to our genius actor, Marcus, who was so funny, Ray. And I loved being pissed in the...
drunk.
That means drunk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because that means angry in America, doesn't it?
Boop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I was going to ask you about that. Because this was, you know, the Good Place was your first foray as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played drunk before?
No,
wait,
I haven't.
Were you drunk?
No, I've actually never had a drink of alcohol.
Yeah, Jamila doesn't drink.
I didn't
so
know that.
So the most exciting part of that scene was that you were... somehow nailed it.
It was very scary to do because I was also worried about just like generally still unconfident first episode back, and they have me pretending to be absolutely shirt-faced.
I do think that's a very hard thing for actors to do, is to like play drunk in a way that's not so cartoony, like Dumbo.
Yeah.
Pink elephant.
Shirt-faced. Was really deft just now.
Thank you.
And is really great.
Okay,
that's
great.
The first I've heard that.
But I because I've been sober my whole life, I've also been surrounded by, because I'm, you know, I'm from England where everyone is drunk all day, every day, from the moment of birth. Mm-hmm. And so in our country, parents literally rub like alcohol on the gums of their babies when they're teething.
Sure.
So it starts, we start young. And we only get worse with age. So I've been
surrounded. Cloudy, drunk country.
Yeah, yeah. It's how we make up for sunshine.
It's why you're here.
Yeah.
That's why
for a lack thereof, sunshine. But because I've been surrounded by drunk people my whole life, I think I was able to like use that as something to pull from in that scene. I loved that version of Tahani, though. I like it when she gets loose. I like seeing the less prim and proper, controlled,
passive-aggressive
version.
I like seeing
version.
The one go, I want that. I'm kidding. No, I'm not. I do want it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Give it to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Take it away from me.
Tahani speaks in like, not sarcasm is not the right word, but she tries to like passive aggressively veil the thing she wants a lot of the time. So sure. I think her just saying like, I want that, give me that is a funny color on Tahani.
Yeah, I find her less disgusting when she owns her own disgustingness.
Right.
Yeah, I can
I think
that
generally of people.
Sure.
I don't have time for fake.
No, I believe that about you.
She only has time for podcasts.
Yes.
Nothing else.
No.
This is the episode when we see version 2 turn into version 3, version 3 turn into version 803.
Yes.
Were there others on the table that you thought about shooting? Were there others that you shot?
Yes. This episode was something that from the very beginning of conceptualizing it, we knew that we were going to have to really play with the lengths of everything that you saw. And it was an episode we talked a lot about as a room before we got into it, because we just wanted to make sure that you saw some reboots that were like 3 seconds long and just gave you like a weird snapshot of something you were never going to see, and then some that you get to live in a little more. The reboot that I particularly wanted to see was there's one where – the gang is all in the bathroom in Eleanor's house, and there's a clown on what appears to be like a hoverboard.
Right, some sort of
like he's not. It's like he's hovering in the air, like a scary clown is like looking for them. And I, as a huge fan of horror movies, really wanted to see the like horror movie horror movies.
Sorry,
yeah. Also love good horror movie. Of
okay,
course.
Good.
But that they're, I was like, what? In the world, and I assure you that, like, we talked about every single reboot and, like, how it could have happened, like, what Michael intended to do with it.
Truly? These weren't just sight gags of monks
and
pigs.
I'm sure this has come up on the podcast, but we, as a writer's room, obsessively talk about the backstories for things because we also know that the fans of this show hold it to a high standard and want to know... You know, that we had a fleshed out world for everything. But so the clown on the hovering around, I was like, I want to see that whole reboot where like Michael wanted to up Eleanor's fear of clowns and like added live ones that went rogue like Westworld or whatever. That I feel like that's pretty good. We should just do that as an episode right now.
That was genuinely terrifying.
Yeah, it's – well, I will say, and Drew Goddard, who I'm sure will come up, who is, like, the best person in the world. He's an EP of the show and then also directed this episode and made what I think to be a masterpiece of a movie called Cabin in the Woods. He's a big horror fan. And so I feel like we talked on set about – I feel like if Drew and I were left to our own devices, it would have just all been horror.
The funniest horror movie of all time.
Which is Cabin in the Woods. So I'm just going to plug Drew's movie. It's the funniest horror movie.
Are you being serious? I can't tell.
Yeah.
I have not seen it.
Yes. It is an incredibly good horror movie and also an incredibly good comedy that are smashed into one movie.
How weird.
So, yeah, it's great.
In a Get Out way?
It's a little sillier than that.
Okay.
But I would say best go to watch it without knowing anything about it, but...
I can't because I'm Scooby-Doo with breasts.
You're
I at first
frightened.
Thought you meant I'm Scooby-Doo when breasts come out. Like, I'm scared of breasts, but you mean Scooby-Doo and you also have breasts.
Yes.
Okay.
Just wanted to make sure everyone remembers about my breasts.
I'll watch it with you, and I'll scream at you every time a scary thing is about to happen.
Okay, great.
But I saw that movie before I worked on this show and was so starstruck meeting Drew And he is the nicest man, so he made it not weird.
He also wrote The Martian, which is something I really enjoyed.
He also wrote The Martian, which is amazing. Yeah. He wrote this new movie that's coming out. This podcast is just turning into me fangirling Drew Goddard.
You know what?
But you know, he's a super fan of our show, though, even though he directs on it and is such a pivotal part of the show. He turns up a lot.
That's
a lot for someone who's not directing the episode or not involved in that episode. He's always there.
He's coming to an Emmy thing tonight.
I'm amazed he's not in this room right now for this podcast.
I have news for you. Please welcome.
Drop down from the ceiling, Drew.
I love Drew. He's a real honor. He's great.
We also see that we go to the medium place.
Yes.
Which it turns out they've done lots and lots of times, much to the chagrin of Mindy St. Clair. She's kept a log of everything. But she shows Eleanor a tape where it indicates that in at least one existence, she and Chidi were much closer. They've slept together. They've shared the words, I love you. That changes the rest of the season, right?
Yes. And we knew, again, when we were first talking about this episode, we knew we wanted to do like a Groundhog Day style episode. But we also knew that would only sustain maybe an act or two.
Okay.
In terms of...
How many acts are there?
There's four in this show. There's like a short fourth act, which is the...
This includes or does not include the cold open?
Does not include the cold open.
Okay.
So the fourth act is running with the credits at the end, but... That's all just to say that we wanted to make sure that we didn't just do the reboots the entire episode because we wanted, as always, to constantly be surprising people. So we knew that we were going to have to introduce like a major piece of information to this. And that came in the Mindy St. Clair storyline where, first of all, it's the first time you see that Mindy St. Clair is not one of Michael's creations.
Right. She's real, right?
Yeah.
She's
an
actual...
Which
Coke
I think
fiend.
By the end of
Wonderful
season one,
citizen.
And she's so fantastic, Mary Beth Monroe. But she, a lot of people at the end of season one were like, was everything part of Michael's plan? And I think we slowly doled out information that almost all of it was, but Mindy's not. She really does live there.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I don't remember if we called it the looking hole or the watching hole. Looking hole.
Mm-hmm.
It was referred to as two different names, as in the conception, pun intended, of this. But the looking hole was a personal favorite of the episode because it's very useful for the story that Mindy's a real pervert.
Oh, yeah.
And she's
love a female peeping Tom.
Isn't that
love
fun?
That.
I feel like
so
she's
refreshing.
She's broken the glass ceiling. She's
yes.
broken the glass
Feminism.
Glory hole. Yeah.
Feminism.
It's like she is like so horny all the time.
Constantly.
And all she wants is just to do drugs and like watch strangers
and that
do it.
And is medium.
Yeah. That's
that's the baseline.
It's also great because like we, again, really, like, did the math of what got Mindy to the medium place. Like, her charity that she created theoretically, like, really affected the world on a massive scale. Last second. But she's also a pretty dirty person.
Oh, she's a dirty bird, yeah.
She's a dirty bird. But so Eleanor and Chidi get there, having been there many times before, and she... on a VHS of Cannonball Run 2, mm-hmm. Reveals that she's recorded them having sex and saying, I love you.
That's right. Which stays canon. Like, we stay in this with this knowledge moving
forward. I hope the makers of Cannonball Run 2 appreciate the fact that we...
gave them a nod.
They're dead.
Gave them a nod. I hope.
And then
now.
Recorded pornography over them.
What year was that? They're dead now.
Oh, that's so sad.
Super parenthetically, I want to say that I love some of the moves that you have Eleanor do, which is like, I'm not going to do this. All right, fine, let's do makeout, but let's just whatever.
Yeah.
And she does it here where she's like, I'm not watching Cannonball Run 2. Fine, just get me caught up. What happens in the first one? Jamila, did you know... You know, we've all seen the video of you getting the reveal of season one from Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know the end of season two going into season two?
Yes.
Interesting.
The second time around, Mike was much more open with us and kind of took us through the season. I think he also knew that it was unkind to have kept us in anxiety.
Do you feel as though it was unkind?
Huh?
Do you feel as though it was unkind?
Oh, it was just so much suspense.
Yeah.
It was just, it was too much suspense for one to cope with. It was stressful, but it played so much better with us not knowing anything. We played it so innocently. And he didn't have to worry about our acting failures because we were able to really, truly, naturally go along with it, which is good.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that. But season two, I knew the map of it and I thought it was absolutely brilliant because I came in just being like, oh, guys, I really think this was more of just like a one season thing.
Really?
Yeah, because you can't top that twist at the end of season one.
All you can do is disappoint.
It just, I had no faith in the writers.
I mean, that's fine.
I just didn't, I couldn't see how they could possibly sustain this brilliant story. And then for season two to take such a complete tangent just blew my mind. And it made the whole season so exciting to film, knowing what we were working towards. And it benefited our acting and our storylines, apart from in this episode where we keep being rebooted again and again and again, which was so fun to play and so fun to be a part of. And people really love this episode.
The thing that keeps the second season from being a disappointment is that the stakes change and
yes.
that an interesting team or dance squad is formed, as we'll hear in this clip. You can see full episodes of The Good Place on NBC.com or the NBC app.
Oh, there you guys are.
No, stop. No more lies. Jason, get over here.
That's right. We know his name is Jason, not Jianyu.
We know everything.
I don't understand much of it, but, you know, I know it.
Your sick torture plan is not working, okay? Because we keep figuring out your little puzzle. We're winning, which means you're losing. So you have two choices here, buddy. Keep failing over and over, or realize we're actually the ones with all the power here.
Yeah, no, we're on the same page.
What?
I want to team up with you guys.
What? Why? You do? What?
I'm in a bit of a bind, and I could use some backup. Or, as Jason put it, I need a new dance crew. So, what do you say? New best friends?
I don't like listening to my English accent when it is amongst lots of lovely American accents. When we just heard that clip, it made
Wait,
me feel
what?
Physically sick. Yeah,
That's
physically sick.
Do you think that Americans have nice accents?
Oh, I love American accents.
Are you serious?
Yeah, well, we have so much American. No, we have so much American TV in England, much more so than you have English TV in America.
So it feels
so,
very calm.
Yeah. I always feel that, no disrespect to this actress, but I fear that I'm Emily from Friends.
Oh. I don't know the reference.
An annoying English woman in Friends.
Oh. You're not.
You have an incredibly melodic speaking voice.
You do.
I feel like Americans, even like my last name is Amram, it's kind of supposed to be Amram, but Americans like me say it Amram.
Sure.
Wait, where would Amram come from?
It's from the Bible. Ever heard of it? It was Moses' dad in the Bible.
Really?
One of my favorite books.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with this book.
Your accent is one you've chosen, right? Like, I'm from Buffalo, New York.
Right.
I speak like this. Buffalo, New York does not speak like
right,
I speak.
Yeah.
Wait, what does Buffalo, New York sound
it's
like?
It's really south side
Do
of
it.
Chicago.
Right now.
It's it's like, it's also not just accent, it's phrases. Like, you know, I says to him, you know, hey. Like, it's real. It's sort of,
that's
nothing
so funny.
Hotter has ever happened than that just now.
Wow.
That was great.
That was not a great Buffalo. And but I, you know, I at some point, decided not to sound like I'm from there. You've told me, Jamila, that
I had a much more common accent.
Yeah,
because I'm a London accent.
When you and your boyfriend
argue. My boyfriend James Blunt, according to Alan Yang.
A lot of people think you're dating James Blunt.
Now they do.
I get a
yeah,
lot of tweets
I know
about that as well.
But
yes, when you argue, it. Tell me what that's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, no, but it just like both of our accents slip. We both went to like fancy secondary schools that we did not belong at because of the class that we are from and were born into. I, in particular, got to play Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady
oh
when
my
I was
God.
10 years old.
I would love to see a recording
completely,
of that.
I have recordings of that, but I, somewhere, I'm sure. So I played Eliza Doolittle and via that like kind of was gifted elocution lessons.
Oh, yes.
Because she goes from like talking like that to talking the way that the rain in Spain stays mainly on the plane. And that's kind of, that was my early preparation
10-year-old
for Tahani.
Wow.
Yeah, 10-year-old Tahani. basically. But when we argue, our accents slip and it's like, you're right, no, shut up. It's just this really like loose, slack-jawed, uglier version of ourselves. Are phony, phony people, sure. And we should be stopped.
When you first told me this story, you said that we'll argue and you'll say, that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, fuck off. That's not what I'm saying. Like, it's just that London accent comes out in you.
What's weird
naturally.
Is I also start doing that when I argue with my boyfriend.
Yeah,
yeah, well, in a Cockney English accent.
Yeah, in Cockney.
I love that. I truly love that. But this is a fake accent, and I think I always longed to be an American. Because of all the American comedy that I'd seen as a child.
Well, you're here, baby, it looks right so at golden the worst and glossy. Time.
The grass is truly always greener because we all covet what you sound like. And
I feel like I've brought the chaos to America, like weirdly coincided.
Actually, that's true.
2015, I feel like that's
right
when everything went downhill. I apologize. I'm sorry.
Let's quickly finish talking about this episode so we can get on to the puns. So they team up. Forms Team Cockroach.
And again, we're constantly trying to blow through entire seasons of story in one episode.
We had some fan questions about that. Like, does the room ever get nervous about blowing through what other shows would milk for seasons?
I think that the start of season two, we were not nervous, but we were like, realized how much work it was going to be to continue moving at the pace that we wanted to, which is even quicker than season one, because season one, we knew everything was fake and he was in control. Season three, which we are writing now, I feel like we are a little more confident just knowing the rhythms of the show and knowing, I think we have a good feeling at this point how much story to move through and what people are expecting of it. Mm-hmm. But we're constantly trying to outsmart our extremely smart viewers. So getting Michael to the point at the end of episode two, functionally, that he is not even going to like try anymore to trick them is like extremely unexpected. And I also, in that clip you played, Eleanor has such a good, Kristen is so great at saying lines like what? Like we always say, like, she's really great at just saying what? Like, just delivering a what.
She and Will both. Yes, Will's got some great whats.
Will has so
Will
many good
Will is a what
whats.
Icon.
Yeah.
I saw a supercut online of, like, all Same. Of Chidi's whats.
Oh, and that's
I was
fun.
Like, that's the sign of a great actor.
Her line the second time in that clip that she's like, what? You do? Why? What?
What?
Were they written what? Question mark, same line, you do? Question mark, or was it stacked? I'm curious.
It was all the same line, as far as I remember. Yeah.
Interesting.
I loved that scene. That was when I read it. I couldn't believe this show and felt nervous instantly again, as do the people on Twitter. Like, I was like, how are they going to keep going?
For sure.
I've
was a lot sweating, until the end of season two. I feel like we were constantly just trying to tell people through the show or our friends, like, no, we got this. Just trust us. Because a lot of people at the end of season one would even write or tweet and just be like, this seems like a one season idea. Like, how else are they going to keep going? And we were like, no, that's our job. Just let us figure out how to do that.
Oh, and they're so good. And it set us up for such an amazing series of like, is Michael for real? Is he actually on their team?
Right.
And for imagining four human beings having to trust a demon just sets you up for so much of a gray area that I thought was really enjoyable.
It's also, Ted is a very sweet man and is also very likable on screen. And we were very excited that we, after this episode, got to start playing with, like, I mean, eventually they do become friends with him. And once they become friends with him, it's much more fun to have Michael as, like, this giddy
fun
dude who's like hanging out with them. Yeah.
And he's a fan of human beings.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He finds the most mundane, peculiar, disgusting things about us so incredible and magical and foreign.
They're no longer the enemy. Now it's Sean and Vicky and the others that he's running from.
Yeah.
Wait, very cool way to just like get Sean in there.
Yeah. Crowbar.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Sean.
Yeah.
Questions from the internet.
Okay.
Jamila, were there any sexy rooms in any of the locations used for this episode?
I can't believe you kept that in from the last episode. No, there were no sexy rooms. A lot of what you see was built by our genius set department team inside a giant universal cage. It's the only way I can describe those things.
Soundstage?
There's a soundstage, yes. So it feels like a cage. You're in a giant box. It's bizarre. But they turn these boxes into whole universes. It's incredible. So a lot of that was done at Universal.
I love this as like a woman who's never been in a building before. Being like, they put you in it.
In a box.
In a box, and there's a top to it. I don't know how they got that up
very
there.
Tall. Very tall.
We don't have these things in England.
Yeah.
There were no sexy rooms. That is the answer. Zero.
Will Megan Amram ever make an appearance on camera?
Please.
The answer is
definitely maybe.
I'm winking. Maybe.
Okay.
You also said maybe. I should be winking stronger. The answer is,
you got something in your
heart?
Probably, yes. stay tuned.
This is an episode where we saw tons and tons of reboots. Were there lots that you shot that we didn't see?
Not too much. We sort of added things on the set which were not necessarily in the script, but there, Drew and my role being on set for this was sort of to look around what we had at our disposal.
You were at the Huntington for some of it, right?
We were at the Huntington. There were just so many locations in this.
That's
true. So we went out to Minnie St. Clair's house, which is shot on like a ranch style house. And that's where we shot the bees running at Chidi.
Uh-huh. Is that where the barn was, presumably?
That's where the barn was. That's where the pig was. The pig was the best coworker I've ever worked
with. Right.
Sorry, Jamila, I know. But the pig was like so cute. And I was like, it's someone's job to just take a pig to television shows?
Yes.
I think maybe that's what I should be doing. The writing thing is fine.
Do you have any experience? Do you have a pet right now?
I don't have a pet, but I have a lot of dogs that I follow on Instagram. So I think I'm ready for it.
I mean, she's the early stages of her training. I think the writing is mostly, you know, she's just honing this out to have a career to fall back on.
It's a gateway.
Yeah.
This is
plan B. The pig wrangler is plan A. But yeah, so we would just see how the space actually looked and play around with it and have, I think it was Drew's pitch to have Chidi running through frame as the bees were chasing him, which ended up being so funny. And it gives a vibe that's almost like Looney Tunes-y.
Right. It's very cartoon.
Which I love so much is like the frenetic sight gag thing, which our show has a lot of sight gags, but some episodes tend towards that and some are tend towards talking. And this was very silly. And then we also got the visual of Eleanor holding the bunch of balloons that became our marketing thing for season two. Was Eleanor holding a bunch of colorful balloons looking shocked.
So this episode happened first and later they pulled
that
as an image?
Yeah, that was from the episode.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
You did also make Manny Jacinto spend about an hour in hair and makeup to look like a mime. And I'm not sure that actually ever got used.
No, I don't know.
That's the best. Thank you for reminding me.
An hour for a boy to spend in makeup.
It was
unheard of.
I know.
This came from us saying Michael found that making Jason silent was a good tactic.
Oh no!
But maybe making him a monk was not the way to go. So the rationale behind this reboot was, okay, we're going to make Jason silent, but in a different way, we're going to say he's like a world famous mime. And
full face paint, completely like ashen white with the red lips. And
it was going to be him like trying to do the invisible box thing. Mm-hmm. And I think he had a line that was like, it's been like 15 hours and I can't even find my way out of this box, implying that he thought he was really in an invisible box. But yeah, I don't think that made it to the episode.
It didn't make it in.
Wait,
if
he was in the chair, if he was in the makeup chair, you shot it, right?
Yeah, that footage exists.
I didn't think we shot it, but if he was in the makeup chair, then we did.
No, we did. I saw him on set with us. It was the set with the small dog and the chainsaw.
That's so fun. We sometimes shoot things out of order, so I might not have been there that day.
Wait a second. Small dog with a chainsaw.
There's a small dog and a chainsaw. What more do you need to know?
Okay, so here's what I'll say. The Good Place writers' room is an extremely pet obsessed room.
Sure.
Like,
in a loving way.
Have
they love
dogs,
pets.
Like the rest of us who don't have them, love them.
Follow them on Instagram.
And I season one, there was an episode where Michael, of course, kicks a dog into the sun.
Sure.
And a very funny thing is that I feel like that, when that first aired, there was a small contingency of people online who were like, "But how dare they kick a dog into the sun?" And
yes.
I was like, first of all, you got to listen to what you're saying because, like, no one in real life is kicking a dog into the sun.
Sure.
But also, we were like, just hold on until the season finale because then you'll find out he's literally a demon.
Right.
So we're implying the demon. So
a lot of people decided to not watch the show anymore because of that one moment.
Well, I will tell you that I'm married to
a lot. I think it was probably like 15. Yeah.
I'm a pet person. I'm married to a veterinarian. And my wife definitely cringes at things like that. Like, well, this show's fine.
Oh,
why was that necessary?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely like a thing that we are not condoning, but.
So it is your
position. Yeah, do not try this at home. Do not try to kick your dog into the sun.
You shouldn't kick your dog into the sun. But I think it is like a thing that a demon like Michael would just be like, yeah, I'm going to torture them by making chop up a dog.
It was also a demon's dog.
Yeah.
That probably was a demon.
And the dog was not real.
It's also not real. Nothing is real because we're in the good place.
We made it very clear that, so the dogs are not real. That being said, again, in real life, don't do it. But
I feel like you're avoiding the subject of the chainsaw.
Well, he was going to. I think this is in the episode, but
the dog doesn't get hurt. Even in what we filmed, it's more that he comes in with the
chainsaw. The dog should not get hurt, especially in what you filmed.
Exactly. Chidi loves puppies.
God, I've really thrown everyone under the bus here, haven't I?
No,
really?
No, no. This is good. This is, we're finally
airing. Have you wanted to get this off your chest for a while?
What if I just break down? I'm like, I forking hate dogs. You got it out of me, Jamila. I like knowing that's going to be bleeped in a funny way.
It will.
So, Chidi loves puppies.
Mm-hmm.
And so early on, one of the reboots, Michael brings him a puppy, but then it's like, you have to. I think he says you have to cut off his head.
Yeah.
And it's very funny to us because it's like so dumb of Michael. It's such a dumb plan. Like, why is the... I think it's Michael losing his grip a little bit on the main premise, which is he's going to psychologically torture them by like having the humans use their flaws against each other. This is just coming right at it. And it's like, you got to cut off a dog's head.
I like, speaking of dogs in that episode, I like the fact that one of Eleanor's potential soulmates is a golden retriever. That was one of my favorite moments in the whole episode.
Thank you for bringing that. I desperately wanted to see that reboot.
Sure.
Because I do think, I feel like I could be very happy for eternity with just a nice golden retriever.
Oh, my goodness.
But that sequence, we have a bunch of people come to the door, including Tahani briefly, and some other random people, Glenn, who's played by one of the writers.
Sure, Josh.
And then the dog. And it's like at that point, we want to just give the feeling of like Michael is just – grasping
He's
at
flailing,
straws
right?
at this point. He's like, well, I got to try everything. Also, and sorry if I'm rambling, but I guess it's a podcast about the episode. So,
yes,
but
time is very precious
for podcasts. The first, the like cold open with the obelisk is one of my favorites too. And there was a very weird extra element to that scene that we ended up cutting, which was that the obelisk is like looming before them.
It wants someone to step inside it to go to the bad place.
It wants someone to step inside to go to the bad place. Michael's like, you guys have to pick someone to go to the bad place. But originally it was going to say, you have to pick someone to go to the bad place because the obelisk is mad and it's about to give birth. And it's so dense in mythology. It's like, this is somehow a pregnant obelisk. That is going to, like, give birth
to
out
what?
Of anger if you don't send someone to the bad place. And that's the kind of thing that really makes me laugh and no one else. So
would
it
give birth to a smaller obelisk?
I think
yes,
it would.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not.
Yeah. Are you paying attention?
Yeah, you sound stupid, Mark.
Yeah. just a female thing.
I'm going to just stick to the questions in front of me. And now we will hear from a definitely real, totally actual sponsor of this program.
Molotov cocktails. Do you need a weapon that is very cheap but also unreliable? Do you have a problem that you want to turn into a different problem? Try a Molotov cocktail. Molotov cocktails. Oh no!
This is an episode in which we saw a lot of murders of Janet, which was super fun.
Yes.
We got to see lots and lots of those. I'm curious, at one point she claims that she's pregnant with Michael's baby, and she produces a sonogram.
Honestly, again, one of my favorite moments in the show.
That's great to hear.
I actually clapped when I saw that on the TV. That was so funny.
Was there anything on the sonogram? Any bits? Any hidden bits?
There was not, but it's... if Janet is just making up whatever she can to stop the murders from happening.
And it's just automatic. It's part of her failsafe, like, don't kill me.
How she didn't break her nose in the amount of falls,
she
just like full-on face dives.
I think she did. Really... I think she said 40 falls or something.
Yeah, crazy. I'm very impressed by all of you actors' physical prowess in front of the camera, whereas my job is... slumped, nearly lying down in a couch all day, not moving.
Yeah, you just sit there. You're the puppet master. You just send us off.
My posture is very bad. I am, I would say, nearly prone at all times of the day.
Well, thank you for sitting up for this podcast.
Of course. It's very hard on my back.
We've discussed on this podcast before that a lot of the, this seems to be a vehicle for the writers to exercise their own demons and pet peeves. Who hates clam chowder?
Oh, that's me. I tend to not try to, like, take credit for things because we all take credit for everything together as a room. But I won't take credit for clam chowder because it's been something that I've been obsessed with for, like, 10 years. I feel
like... what the fork is it?
Here's the thing.
Clam chowder?
Yeah, what the fork is it? It's disgusting. It looks
like... I don't think we got your question. Would you ask it one more time? Would you ask it one more time?
I was just wondering what the fork it was.
There are two types?
Yeah, Jamila's saying what the fork is clam chowder. I feel like comedy writers all have like two things they get really obsessed with. Or, you know, like a handful of things that on like every show they've written for, they like pitch jokes about it or whatever.
Sure.
Clam chowder to me is like the funniest food by far. And I also don't like it in real life. But
you like neither? You don't like New England style or Manhattan style?
I don't really like shellfish and like...
There are two, Jamila.
It's clam chowder is just like a bunch of heavy cream and flour and then shellfish. Well, and
that's New England.
It's piping hot.
Is it a dessert or a main?
It's a main. A dessert clam chowder is so funny. And I'm so mad I didn't put this in the show.
Like a clam chowder trifle.
Or, like a tiramisu. You just get that clam chowder.
You soak a bread
like,
with clam chowder.
Yeah, you soak
I literally feel sick. I think I'm going
to
throw
up. Guys, tweet at me if you barf listening to this podcast. I don't know why I think it's so much stupider than every other food, or definitely soup. But I loved that Eleanor, does a, 5 minutes of stand-up about clam chowder in this episode. But... I would say that a lot of my favorite types of jokes fall into the category wrong food.
Sure.
Which is either like gross foods or foods being used incorrectly or pun names for restaurants.
But interesting segue.
Yeah, it's so
way
weird.
To shoehorn Sean into that. I mean, puns. Yeah. Is this your sweet spot? Do you do this? Are you okay?
I'm definitely not okay. Thank you for asking. Uh-huh. There's definitely something like wrong with me. I don't know what it is.
Are these all yours? Like we had lots of names for frozen yogurt in season one.
Yes.
In this episode, we've got pastry things. We've got Italian food.
So Mike Schur assigns episodes to the writers sort of by seniority, but also sort of by what thematically fits the writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we were breaking this episode that had like a million different frenetic things in it and also a ton of food jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, Megan should probably write this, which I was incredibly honored by. And I don't know if there's like a name for the
problem.
Problem. if you want to look at it negatively, super talent, definitely a problem of like literally being unable to not think of puns all the time. So when I first got to know Mike, when I wrote for Parks and Rec, I distinctly remember thinking of puns and then like not saying them out loud because Mike seemed like he didn't like them very much. And at one point I was like, Mike, do you want me to just like say every pun out loud that I think of? And he was like, yeah. And then I became extremely disruptive because
pun
all I
monster.
Do. Yeah. Pun monster. I started, I've talked about this before, but I started texting Mike every single pun I would think of like out of work. So if you read our text messages, it's just me saying terrible puns and him usually responding being like, okay.
I feel like
just
that,
like, so
that
dismissive.
Could be published as a book and sold in Urban Outfitters.
Yeah, we were doing a panel
once. A
point
of purchase book?
It's a prank book that you should get for people you don't like. But this episode had all these reboots and we decided we wanted the restaurants because, again, Michael thinks that there's something wrong with Froyo and that's why.
Right. He had to improve
needed
it.
To keep rebooting the food restaurants. But so every time he reboots it, the restaurants all change their names. And I, being me, instead of writing the like 9 names that we needed.
That you would maybe use.
Yes. Wrote like 40. Maybe more.
Are there pages and pages,
pages
of it?
Yeah.
I have a page here with at least 120.
Oh, yeah, you have the page that I tweeted a bunch of them, and there actually is another half a page or something that was on a different page, so I didn't pull them off.
So in a
Provolone again, naturally, you genius.
But see, when you say them out loud, it's like, well, now I have to stand behind them. When you write them, it's just like, you can just pretend like they don't exist.
I don't know. What,
you're
okay.
Such
so
you lunatic. Just throw.
So there is a shame.
Tweet. Yeah. When you just send them to the writers, you can just get rid of them forever.
Such as Biscotti Pippin.
Well, the catcher in the rice.
Biscotti Pippin is based on the only basketball player I know because I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and remembered hearing about Scottie Pippin once.
Hokey gnocchi.
Yeah, I was about to say you do the hokey gnocchi and you eat yourself some food.
I personally like puns that have like mispronunciations in them. So one of mine is squab goals that I like a lot.
Amazing. Oh. I've just seen my favorite one.
Please.
You don't own me.
Yeah.
Oh, udon noodles. Udon.
Yes.
Yeah. Udon know me.
Did you also write one? Someone sent me this on Twitter. I hadn't picked up on it before. Camembert bee, let's go party.
Yeah. Why in the world would I have written that? Is that in? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, come on, Barbie.
Yeah, that's in the list that I'm looking at, right? Camembert bee, let's go party. What you have to do is get your brain really loose. You have to enter a sort of twilight sleep and just wait to see what things sound like.
Megan Amram, what's good?
Since we were talking about it, I have to say, for real, Instagram dogs have been a very, like, soothing thing when you're filled with, like, horrible news and, like, human pain. And you shouldn't close yourself off to that. But I find looking at, like, a cute dog in Australia who's just, like, jumping around the beach very soothing.
What is it about American dogs you hate so much?
I just feel like American dogs are not stepping up their game of, like, fanciness. Like, I felt a lot of South Korean dogs who are very fancy.
Is this true?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Go find this dog named Bichon Tori. She has a perfectly round head. A lot of people think she looks like a bug, but I think she's very cute. And, of course, my OG, my ginger doodle, is a beautiful girl.
Jamila, what's good?
Spooning. No, I'm joking.
That's perfect.
Megan. I've just seen Linguini Manuel Miranda.
Oh, yeah.
He's
a fan
God.
Of the show. The real one, not the pasta one.
Yeah, he's amazing. I want him to be on our show. There's so many people that I feel like now we should be allowed to get on our show, especially for like season 3, season 4. We're still filming. I want all of the celebrities on this show because they could all play Tahani's friends. And then
yeah,
me and Megan can meet them.
Yeah.
yeah, we have no dignity.
No, none whatsoever. That's why we're great friends.
Yeah.
So casting your new friends out of famous people is what's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I am turning into Dani. I'm becoming a monster.
Sure.
She is.
Yeah, turning into.
Yeah, yeah,
becoming.
Yeah. I've started to tweet GIFs of myself, which I think is a new low that even I didn't see coming for myself, because there's so many
awesome.
Amazing Dani GIFs. I now, like, fully non-ironically just GIF myself in reactions to other people's tweets. I need help. I'm becoming a monster.
This is a cry for help podcast.
Yeah. Help me not be so much of a
shirt.
Send suggestions at Jamila Jamil on Twitter.
Jamila Jamil, Megan Amram, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast.
Bye. I'm Mark
Jackson. Go do something good.
Sorry.
You're not sorry.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. And now to deliver our credit sequence is Bad Janet. Take it away, Bad Janet.
Whatever. If you enjoyed this podcast, which, like, how is that even possible? Please subscribe. It's available on all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts. I don't even know. Or if you don't want to subscribe, you can also just listen to your mom's butt, you fat dink. You burnt.
Why don't I handle the credits? The podcast is hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Ew.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Who?
It's written by Lizzie Pace.
Okay.
And the music is composed by David Schwartz.
David Schwartz. See you next time, nerds.